Hello, everyone, and welcome to Let's Talk About. I'm Keith.
And I'm Zach.
And we are coming to you from a different location today.
I talked Keith into coming inside.
It was only 39 degrees outside. I don't know what the problem was. But
I think Keith said something maybe about kayaks. I don't know.
They're actually put up for the winter. They really are. But
put them up.
Yeah.
That's surprising.
We knew though that we were going to have to move inside eventually. At some point. Yep. And so we have made a new home away from home.
And we're trying out something different this week too. We're not going to surprise you with
it. We're not going to tell you what we're trying out, but we are trying something different.
Right.
And it'll be obvious when we reveal what we're trying.
Yes.
What we're trying. Anyway,
you lost your sentence.
I did. I lost it.
Just
there.
Leave
but,
it back there.
We are in the teen classroom at Paintsville Church of Christ.
Yes.
And we are trying this out to see if it's going to work as our winter home.
And I think it will.
Maybe. May have a few bugs to work out, but we're going to get
work.
It figured
Take
out.
Work.
So anyway, this is episode number 22. Kind of hard to believe.
Wow.
This is actually episode number 11 with the two of us together.
Time flies.
Time
that's
does
11
fly.
Weeks, Keith. 11 weeks.
That's almost 3 months. In this episode today, let's go ahead and start out with our verse of encouragement. As we said, this is a segment that we added here a couple of weeks ago because we want to be encouragers and we want to encourage you to be encouragers of those who are around you.
We hope our program encourages you and uplifts you all at the same time.
Absolutely.
We don't want to bring you down.
No.
We want to build you up.
No, we want to build you up.
That's right.
Zach, what's our verse for today?
If you have your Bibles, our verse today comes from Psalm 147, verse 3. Psalm 147, verse 3. He heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. Keith, let's start us out.
So the psalmist is obviously talking about God as being the healer and the binder.
Right.
And as we think of these wounds that are being discussed, I believe we're talking about wounds of the heart, wounds of the spirit.
Right. Not literal physical wounds, mental wounds.
You know that,
I mean, you could maybe go into physical, but
you maybe could.
But
you know, we're talking about
a metaphorical sense here.
Yes, metaphorical.
Right.
Good
That's
word.
That's a good word. Word of the day.
Very
metaphorical.
Good word. Anyway. In our actual discussion of this metaphorical topic.
Way to stick that in there.
you know, we rely upon God and we trust in God to be the healer of our broken hearts. We have all experienced those things. We've all had times when we have been injured in our soul or in our spirit by someone else or by circumstances that have happened in life. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, it is a touchy subject because the wounds of the heart can be just as painful as the physical wounds
yes,
that
and
we
sometimes
were
even more painful.
Metaphorically discussing.
Yes.
and sometimes I think physical wounds will heal faster than emotional wounds will.
Right.
So we rely upon God to be the healer and the binder, but I think God is also relying upon us to help others who are around us.
Yeah.
We know that there are others who are in need of these things. One thing that we need to do is open our eyes to those who are around us who are in need.
And that goes back to the lesson that we did on servitude. Earlier
right.
as well. Have
right.
your eyes open and your heart open and see what's going on around you.
And that is very difficult to do sometimes.
Yes, it
we,
is.
We get caught up in our own little bubble. And don't get me wrong, I like my bubble.
My bubble's nice.
I could stay in my bubble.
I like my bubble too.
But I don't think that's where God wants me to stay.
No.
He doesn't want us to stay in our own little bubble. So our verse of encouragement for this week coming from Psalm 147 and 3, he heals the brokenhearted and he binds up their wounds. Now, we should go be those healers and binders as well.
Well, what I got from this verse is, I mean, it's no mystery that life is hard. I mean, let's be honest, life is hard. And if you're a Christian, life is 10 times more hard because constant weight of the world and the weight of sin is weighing down on you. And it sometimes can cause those metaphorical wounds to the heart and to the soul.
Right.
But one of the best things that we can do when we experience those metaphorical wounds is to look to God and to His Word and read His Word. Because a lot of times His Word can uplift us, it can encourage us.
We need to get into the book.
Yes.
That is for sure. That is how God speaks to us.
Yes.
And if we are not opening the book, then we are effectively, let's use another
metaphor. Distancing ourselves.
Using another metaphor. We're not answering the phone when God calls. Yeah.
Metaphor is the word of the day today.
We'll see how many times we can use it in the next half hour. Okay, so last week we started talking about apathy, and I think it was in the promo video, actually, we mentioned that we had much, much more to say about that.
And so today's episode is titled Apathy Part 2.
Part 2. And you know what? As you start talking about apathy, part of you says, who cares?
That's what apathy is, though,
Keith. That's what apathy is.
Good lead-in.
Who cares? But we talked last week primarily about apathy on a personal level.
Yes.
And this week we want to kind of change it a little bit and not to tell you what we're doing next week, but we're going to have part 3 next week.
Yes.
And,
apathy can extend to a lot of different things, so we can cover this for long period of time.
If it were our desire,
yes.
we could keep talking about apathy and we could keep asking who cares. But today, let's talk about the church and apathy within the church, particularly within individual congregations. Not talking about the church worldwide, but the church where you are. And, we kind of go back to what we talked about last week. It really begins with the individual and radiates outward from there, whether it is the attitude of who cares or whether it is the attitude of I care. It has to start with the individual. And, I had some ideas. We asked this question, is your congregation apathetic? I thought of two problems that lead to apathy within churches. Two diseases.
Keith's got that smile on his face that I know he's about to make something. It's good.
Well,
he knows it's good too.
The first disease is two disease. You ever heard of two disease?
I've never heard of two disease. Oh, is that a real medical condition?
I don't know if it's a medical condition or not, but it's a spiritual condition. When we start looking at the challenges that are around us, and we start saying, "Well, you know what? I'm too busy in my life," or "We're too small," speaking of congregation-wise, or our budget is too small, or the people around us are too uncaring.
Key word in all of those illustrations: too.
T-O-O.
T-O-O.
Right. When we get two disease and we start making those excuses all around us, it's contagious, for one thing.
It is. It's very contagious.
And
one person can infect a whole congregation.
Well, and it's also kind of like, some physical diseases that can start in one part of your body and spread throughout your entire body. Once you start making those excuses, it is easy to find more and more excuses.
Mm-hmm.
We start telling ourselves, we could do more if only we had this, or if only this were available to us. And instead of finding the things that do work and that we can do, we find reasons why things won't work and we can't do.
Right. And if we had gotten rid of those excuses and those reasons of why it won't work, oftentimes it will work. You just got to put an effort in to making it work.
Right. You know what? We all face problems. We all have challenges. But, you know, those things are either going to help us grow or they're going to stop us dead in our tracks. Mm-hmm. And tooth disease is one of those that just stops us. Now, the other disease is eye disease and not...
I was going to say, that may actually be a real medical condition.
Yes, and you know, we actually both know people right now that are struggling with some eye diseases.
But it's not EYE, it is I.
Right. The letter I. When I start making everything about me, that is also infectious, and mm-hmm. it is also one of those things that will... stop us as individuals cold in our tracks, and it will stop a congregation in its tracks. When everything is about me, when my problems are greater than the Lord, than we view the Lord's ability to help, and when I view my problems as superseding everything else in life, it's going to contribute to this problem of apathy. So anyway, we've got much more here. We could dwell on those problems, but that doesn't fix anything. It's like going to the mechanic and the mechanic saying, well, your car's broke, but doesn't tell you he can fix it or anything like that.
But today we're going to explore some answers to fixing apathy within your congregation.
And since we're talking about congregations, let's talk about some problems that were in actual congregations and some of the solutions that were presented. And to do that, let's go to Revelation 3. These letters that were written at the mouth of Jesus by the hand of John, mm-hmm. to the seven churches of Asia. When we come to Revelation 3, we find three of those churches. We find Sardis, Philadelphia, and
Laodicea.
And Philadelphia didn't really receive that much condemnation from Jesus, but there were still things Jesus said that they could and should be doing. But
now, Laodicea, they received some very stark condemnation.
Well, so did Sardis.
Yes.
Sardis and Laodicea. Let's start with Sardis.
Okay.
In Revelation 3 and 1, to the angel of the church in Sardis write, "These things says he who has the seven spirits of God and the seven stars. He said, I know your works, that you have a name that you are alive, but you are dead." Jesus wrote this to a church. He said, you know, from the outside, everything looks good, but inwardly, you're dead. And are those words that Jesus would write to the congregation where you are?
Right.
And if he would write those words, I can't imagine being in Sardis and receiving that letter and you know, this is the Lord speaking to us and saying, hey, you are still walking around, but you're dead. And you know, I read of a guy a long time ago who said, you know, if I knew the place where I was going to die, I'd never go near there.
Right.
You know. Jesus, in effect, is pronounced their death sentence upon them.
Well, to give like a worldly example or a historical reference to this, Mark Twain once coined the phrase, the Gilded Age. The reason that he coined the phrase, the Gilded Age, was because it was a great time. The Gilded Age, it extended from the late 19th century into the early 20th century, and it was a great time of American prosperity. It was a great time to be American. You know, we had all kinds. We were experiencing an industrial revolution, immigrants coming from all around the world. But he coined it the Gilded Age because it was all gold and silver on the outside, but it was dirty and corrupted on the inside. Mm-hmm. And sometimes our churches look all gold and silver on the outside, but on the inside, they're corrupted by sin.
And sin certainly is one of those problems. And as we address the church at Sardis, Jesus tells them in verse 3 that they need to repent. I want to notice what he says in verse 2, Revelation 3 and verse 2. He says, "Be watchful and strengthen the things which remain that are ready to die, for I have not found your works perfect before God." So if we want to address the problem of apathy within our congregations today, mm-hmm. let's take the advice that Jesus gave to the church at Sardis. He said, strengthen the things that remain. If we find ourselves with tooth disease or eye disease, we recognize that there is a problem. We recognize that we're not growing as we should. We recognize that there are things that are not getting done that need to be done to edify and to encourage the congregation. Let's do exactly what Jesus has said. In order to strengthen the things that remain but are ready to die, we need to take a look around and maybe notice what we do well.
Right.
And
you got to determine what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are.
Absolutely.
And work on your strengths.
And that is what Jesus is telling them is, and I don't think he's telling them to not pay any attention at all to their weaknesses, mm-hmm. but he's telling them to exploit their strengths.
Right.
Well, the congregation where you are, what is it doing right? Again, not trying to take all focus away from what might be wrong, but stop for a moment and look at what is going right, what is going well, what you do well, and exploit those things.
And sometimes when you focus on your strengths and exploit your strengths, as you said, the weaknesses oftentimes will take care of themselves.
That is exactly right. And and this is something we can do in any congregation, anywhere.
Yes. Every congregation has strengths and weaknesses.
Every congregation does.
Yes.
And there are things that every congregation does well.
Mm-hmm.
But are you doing well with what you do well?
That's deep. You had a good one last week too, but I can't remember what it was.
Well, it must not have been too good, or you would have
remembered. It was good,
but,
though.
You know. Anyway, think of the church at Sardis. Strengthen the things that remain.
Mm-hmm.
So we move on within the chapter, and he begins addressing the church at Philadelphia. He says in verse 8, "I know your works. See, I've set before you an open door, and no one can shut it," he says. "For you have a little strength, have kept my word, and have not denied my name." He's telling them good things, but then he begins to encourage them in verses 10 and 11 to persevere. And he tells them that "I also will keep you from the hour of trial which shall come upon the whole world to test those who dwell on the earth. Behold, I'm coming quickly," in verse 11. And then he says, "Hold fast what you have, that no one may take your crown." Now, if we want to dispel apathy within our congregations, or perhaps even within our lives,
and we should all strive to dispel apathy within our congregation and our lives,
Let's take a look at what we have. I realize this is very similar to strengthen the things that mm-hmm. remain, but Jesus is telling them to hold fast to what they have. Now, what is it that we have? What is it that every congregation has? They've got faith.
Mm-hmm.
They've got faith, or they would not exist. That faith must be held on to.
Right.
And it needs to be strengthened, and it needs to be growing.
Faith is an ever-evolving thing. We should always be working on ways to strengthen our faith.
You know, I think one of the things that that we both had in our notes as we were preparing for this was Newton's first law of motion. States that a body at rest remains at rest, or a body in motion remains in motion, unless acted upon by an unbalanced force or, or an outside force. When we start talking about apathy, if apathy is something that exists within your congregation or within your life, if you allow that to just sit, that's all that's going to happen. It's going to gain its own momentum. But
if you put your congregation in motion by getting your congregation on fire for God, that's a very important thing. You have to inspire your congregation to want to serve and worship God.
And I'm glad you mentioned worship there, because I think that that is an excellent starting point. Now, I've heard the complaints, and I know you have too, and I know everybody who's listening has heard the complaints before that, well, our worship is just dead. And you know, maybe not everywhere and every place and every time, but you know, at some time or another, you've heard somebody comment something to that effect. And I was talking to a guy here a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about the singing at this particular congregation. And he was like, oh, the singing is just awful, you know. And he wasn't talking about their ability to hit the right notes and things of that nature.
Right.
He was talking about the spirit that
the
went
effort
into
yeah.
it. And he made the comment that it was just ho-hum, humdrum, you know, going through the motions. You know, as we approach our worship, and I use singing as an example there, but we could talk about all of the acts of worship, whether it is the singing. Let me throw some advice out relative to that. When it comes time to sing, do it with all your mind.
Yes.
You know, hey, I don't even take my phone into worship.
Right.
As a general rule, it gets left in my pocket and carried in every once in a while. But if you're worried about what's on your phone during the song service, your mind is not going to be on the song service. Sit up a little bit straighter. I know, you know,
don't slouch down.
We've got those padded pews, and a lot of times,
man, they're comfy.
You know, Sunday evenings, Wednesday nights especially, we you know, we're tired. It's been a long day, been through a lot, and you know, it's easy to just sit back and kick back and try sit up a little bit straighter. You know, for one thing, yes, it helps your singing ability because, you know, you're allowing your diaphragm to expand and but, you know, you're also increasing the oxygen flow through your entire body, and it's going to stimulate your brain. We talk about praying. Is prayer something we do, or is prayer something we get to do? You know, leading a public prayer is a challenge for some people. And you know,
and that goes back to strengths and weaknesses of everyone.
Strengths, you know, and weaknesses,
God-given talents.
But you know, those who are not actually engaged in verbalizing the prayer have just as much obligation to be engaged in that prayer, because that person is praying on behalf of the entire congregation. You have the body of saints lifting their voice collectively before God. The Lord's Supper, of course, you know, is something that it requires our attention. It requires that we be engaged with the sermon. You know, let me just say this, and I speak against myself as much as anybody else. Some sermons are painful to listen to, not because of the topic material, but you know, just because of the speaker. I'm guilty of that. I know that I am. But you know, if you are looking at that as something, well, you know, it's something we've got to do. You know, take notes, open your Bible, turn to the passages, and engage yourself with the lesson. Your worship as a whole is going to become more meaningful And not only that, others are going to notice that you are engaged, and it might encourage someone else to become engaged.
And in the article that I recently wrote, I talked about how sometimes we become apathetic to things that we hear all the time as Christians. And sometimes, in order to fix apathy within a congregation, we have to change the focus of that congregation. You have to change your focus spiritually sometimes. And everybody gets humdrum, you know, in their worship service sometimes, and we're all guilty of it. We're human. We're not perfect. But we have to change our focus and our perspective.
Challenge yourself.
Yes.
Insert
daily challenges into your spiritual life.
Well, not only that, but when you come together as the church, challenge yourself that you are going to be engaged with what is going on and perhaps even encourage someone else to become more engaged.
So what's our third step?
All right.
We have a three-step solution to apathy. The third step is?
Well, we go on in Revelation 3 to the church at Laodicea.
Yes.
And, let's be honest. Of the seven churches of Asia that are mentioned here in Revelation 2 and 3, this is probably the most famous one.
It is.
It's the one that everybody knows about.
And it's got a very well-known verse within when they're talking about Laodicea as well. I will spit you out of my mouth.
They are famous because of the condemnation that they received. I know your works. You're neither cold nor hot. I wish you were cold or hot. So then, because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will vomit you out of my mouth. That's something very strong that Jesus.
It's a strong illustration.
It is. But we often stop there at verse 16, but we need to go on to verse 17 because Jesus tells them the solution. He tells them to buy the good stuff. He said, because you are rich and have become wealthy and have need of nothing, and you don't know that you're wretched and miserable and poor and naked and blind, I counsel you to buy from me gold refined in the fire that you may be rich. And keeping that thought together, I counsel you to buy from me white garments that you may be clothed and that the shame of your nakedness may not be revealed.
And these are all metaphorical in sense as well.
Absolutely. But, the gold refined in fire comes through trials.
Yes.
We have to get through those trials. And,
we oftentimes are stronger once we go through those trials.
Absolutely. It takes some effort to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to be willing to go through that effort. The white garments, purity.
Holiness.
Holiness. And then he mentions also the eye salve to heal their blindness.
Yes.
Started to say their nakedness, but eye salve wasn't going to help that. But their spiritual blindness.
What do you think he means by spiritual blindness?
I think that he means they have closed their eyes to the fact that they are lukewarm.
Yes. They've just kind of, okay.
Yeah. And that is indeed a problem. Okay, so we are out of time already. I don't know where does the time go.
So fast, so quick. You would think it would take forever to record this. No.
It flies by. Thank you for listening. We want to leave you with our contact information, our website at letstalkaboutchristianity.com, our Facebook page, search the same thing.
Let's Talk About Christianity, a Christian radio program and podcast.
And then our email address is Keith or Zach at letstalkaboutchristianity.com. Please tune in next week, and thank you for listening.